Solar power provided less than 4% of the country's electricity last year, but President Biden wants it to be nearly 50% by 2050. Ivan Penn is a Los Angeles-based energy correspondent for the New York Times. Ivan, welcome. And what would it take to reach the president's goal?
Well, there are quite a few hurdles. And in the past, it was a technological one. Solar wasn't quite there a couple of decades ago, but technologically, you know, it's proven to be a workable source of generation. So our issues now have more to do with policy. You have the fossil fuel industry that argues we're not at a place where solar can be a dominant source of energy because obviously it only produces when the sun is shining. So it needs right. something to support it. Batteries would be one way, the fossil fuel industry says, well, we need the bridge fuel of natural gas to get to this clean energy future where sources like solar can play this significant role.
Let's take a moment to talk about those batteries that you just referenced. How much progress have we seen with the battery technology so that we can store that energy when the sun is shining and use it when it's not?
Well, we've made significant progress technologically and economically, but we still have a bit of a ways to go. Part of the challenge is in the makeup of the batteries. So the technology of choice has been lithium ion batteries. Part of the cost issue there and the technological issue is, you know, obviously lithium is a primary component and it's largely sourced in South America and Australia and processed in China. So all of those components to producing the batteries, you know, that's a lot of cost. And what we're trying to do in the United States is to see about domestically sourced lithium and a reduction of some of the other elements in lithium ion batteries, particularly cobalt, which largely comes from places like the Congo in Africa. So if we can provide a domestic source, that should help with cost and also help with domestic industry.
Might also be controversial because, of course, mining lithium in our own backyard could come along with some environmental issues. Now, listen, I live in a very sunny state of Arizona where I've noticed that many more rooftop solar installations have gone up. There are still federal tax credits to cover 30% of the cost. What role do you think individual homes will play in a renewable future for solar as opposed to, say, a utility-scale project that's out in the desert somewhere?
Well, you know, and I mentioned the tension and even within under the solar umbrella, if you will, there is tension between the utility scale and the rooftop solar. Clean energy proponents would rather there not be this kind of tension, but the reality is that there is. And one of the parts of this is the utility scale. Obviously, panels are cheaper because it's a large number of panels for a solar farm. On the rooftop side of things, you're talking about the ability of homeowners to take more control of their electricity. Couple that with a home battery and an electric vehicle, especially where electric vehicle technology is going to not only consume energy, but the car itself to be able to help power your home along with the stationary battery that might be in your home. Solar energizing those batteries, powering those batteries, it really changes a lot of dynamics for the lives of the individual. Where some of the additional tension comes in is, you know, overall, solar, it's a different kind of job market that it creates where you might have, I mean, in both cases of big box power plants like a natural gas plant and a solar farm or rooftop solar. Obviously, you've got the construction installation jobs. But after that's done, fossil fuel plants like natural gas, you know, that's dozens of jobs to maintain and operate. A solar farm, you know, it's perhaps someone who cleans the panels. Rooftop solar, you know, those jobs disappear. So there's the tension over labor. There's the tension over cost. There's the tension of the impact that this has on utilities if everybody's producing their own and storing their own.
I'm starting to understand why the utilities might be concerned that they may not be able to sell my neighbor or me or the whole entire city power if everyone's getting the energy from the panels on top of their roofs. Have those questions largely been settled, or are they brewing out in the future still?
This has not been settled, and you see even today a great deal of this debate from Florida to California. Part of that debate is how much should a homeowner who has solar be compensated for the excess power that they generate and deliver to the electric grid?
That's called net metering, correct?
That's right. And in many cases, the net metering policies compensate the homeowner the equivalent of a retail dollar-for-dollar compensation. And the utilities say, well, that's not fair because we can get that electricity cheaper on the wholesale market. And so this is putting an undue burden on those who don't have solar, and especially their argument is the poor and the low income.
Well, then let's talk about equity, because solar is great if you can afford your own home, if you can afford to put the panels on your roof. But what about everybody else? Is there an effort out there to make solar more equitable?
There are efforts to do that. The argument that solar hurts the poor, the low income, and even, you know, middle class is overly simplistic. The other side of the argument is that there are projects that show how the average person who's not even a homeowner can benefit from rooftop solar and a battery. Biggest example is in Utah, a new apartment complex where there's solar panels, and in every apartment unit, there's a battery. The benefit of all of this is that not only does the individual renter actually have their own battery that can keep their home powered even if the grid goes down, there is the technological ability to harness all of the batteries in that complex and send that power to the electric grid to support the grid. And they call it a battery swarm. And, you know, that's an enormous benefit that no matter whether you're a renter or not, you know, you're able to participate in that.
It sounds like there's a lot of unanswered questions in the future, a lot of fights with utilities, legal questions, that sort of thing. What's your prediction for the solar industry over the next decade or so? Do you think it will become as prominent as the federal government wants it to be right now?
Well, the biggest thing is that solar is one of the least expensive generation sources now. The price of solar is really, really cheap, especially in comparison to fossil fuel generators now. So that's going to be a big driver. There is the push for the continuation of federal tax credits in support of solar and for batteries. So, you know, I mean, there's a great deal of potential for a revolutionary way of looking at our energy picture that the electric grid didn't contemplate when we built it 100 years ago.
Ivan Penn is a Los Angeles-based energy correspondent for The New York Times, talking to us today about solar energy and its future here in the United States. Ivan, thank you so much.
My pleasure.